It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Folks, we are in a period where every day there is a new little bombshell about President Donald Trump. Most are of his own making, like firing the FBI director and admitting the investigation into his own campaign was a reason, or dropping one of Israel's classified secrets on the Russians. And now comes maybe the most incriminating bombshell to date, the New York Times report of a memo by FBI Director Comey from back in February saying Trump just asked him to drop the Michael Flynn investigation. Democrats are calling it obstruction of justice. Even John McCain is using the W word.
I think it's reaching the point where it's of Watergate size and scale and a couple of other scandals that you and I have seen. It's a centipede that the shoe continues to drop.
John McCain is now comparing Trump's situation to Watergate. Later this hour, we'll talk to another Republican senator who could break ranks with Trump, Ben Sasse of Nebraska, who has said Trump's relentless focus is on dividing America. We begin with New York Times White House correspondent Glenn Thrush. His latest article is called "At a Besieged White House, Tempers Flare and Confusion Swirls." Glenn, thanks as always. Welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be here. Boy, that's a long title for an article, isn't it?
That's a long title, but, you know, I know that these titles get shorter with each the next iteration on the website. The Times was told about the Comey memo, but not given the Comey memo. How much should we trust it if the paper's sources weren't willing to show you the document?
Michael Schmidt is the is really, I believe, the premier investigative reporter on this topic right now, and he's broken a ton of stories. He was the co-byline on the piece that dealt with Bill O'Reilly's indiscretions. He is somebody who has a 3 or 4 year track record and impeccable sourcing, both in the Justice Department and the FBI. I am frankly aghast. Actually, I shouldn't use the term aghast. That's too pro-clutching. I am curious that Senator Richard Burr, the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, should say it is a responsibility of a newspaper and not himself to obtain these memos. He has subpoena power. Today, he could request from Director Comey this memo and have it placed on the public record and get it out there.
So, right. Well, we have Jason Chaffetz, the Republican head of the House Oversight Committee, asking the FBI for exactly that, don't we?
We absolutely do. And we have, I think, a number of Republicans, I think, who are moving towards something approaching an independent investigation. And Brian, this isn't a matter of necessarily them doing this in the public interest exclusively, though I'm not disregarding that as a potential motive. This is becoming a huge political problem. I was talking to a couple of senators yesterday on background, and they were saying Trump is trashing their entire agenda. You know, everything that they've worked for in terms of getting two House majorities large enough to pass stuff is now being squandered by this kind of thing. So there's genuine anger, and there's nothing senators or members of the House hate worse than being brought down, both in terms of their approval and potential reelection, by someone else's scandal.
Right. Let me jump in because I need to do a legal ID for the benefit of the FCC. This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Brian Lehrer with New York Times White House correspondent Glenn Thrush, and we can take a couple of phone calls anyway for him on the latest bombshell via the New York Times, Trump possibly trying to impede the FBI's investigation of Michael Flynn. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Let me back up one step, because acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe testified last week that there's been no attempt to impede the collusion investigation. How does that square with Comey's memo, assuming this memo is real?
Well, it clearly isn't accurate if the memo is accurate. I mean, I think then again, you're dealing perhaps in McCabe with somebody who hasn't been entirely read out on things. It's hard to understand some of these public statements. I mean, we had General McMaster making a public statement on the Monday's bombshell, or was it Tuesday's bombshell? It seems like we've had 2 weeks crammed into one here. So we have a lot of people saying a lot of things. Some of them are carefully lawyered. Some of them aren't. I think really the public statement, I think one thing we've learned about sort of covering this White House and the group of people that surround it is public statements are really a devalued currency. It's fact and narrative that really determines what happens. You can't necessarily take people's public statements on face value at this point.
So with Chaffetz calling for the FBI to release any memos, any written documentation, he says, not just this particular memo, of Comey's contacts with Trump. And apparently Comey wrote things down a lot after speaking with the president on various occasions. Lindsey Graham says memo schmemo. He wants Comey to speak. Both things should happen, in my opinion, and it shouldn't be too hard for them to happen. So how much do you see a glide path versus big obstacles to making the memo and a Comey public verbal account? Public.
Oh, look, we're well past the point where people can avoid having a full disclosure on this thing. It's inevitable. It's just a matter of timing and people figuring out a way to get this done. But sooner or later, all this stuff's going to come out, and it ought to. I mean, the question here, Brian, is whether or not there really is fire underneath all this smoke. You know, there's a very good possibility that, you know, Donald Trump personally didn't do anything particularly wrong in terms of the Russian collusion story. Well, we don't know that because things have been so confused in terms of his attempt to squash this investigation.
We might have the world's most elaborate cover-up of no underlying crime.
Except, you know, obstruction of justice is a crime in and of itself.
Right.
Of course, you know, the president, that is virtually the definition of high crimes and misdemeanors. I would point out, again, I'm not making this as an assertion, but if the fact pattern proves itself out, and the president of the United States personally and directly requested from the FBI director that he cease an investigation into his campaign, that's actually a more direct pressure than Nixon did in Watergate, where Nixon attempted to do that through intermediaries. This would be evident. I think, you know, you talk about sort of mini bombshells. This is a significant, if it's proven to be true and there aren't extenuating circumstances. And, you know, the one thing I would caution about is not the veracity of the report, but the context. Sometimes over time, things that seem to be entirely unequivocal turn out to be mitigated by other circumstances. You never know what the circumstance of somebody saying something is. But, you know, at the very, very least, I think Mike's story yesterday should move people, particularly Senator Burr and the folks who are investigating this on the House side, towards getting a full disclosure here, whether that's direct testimony by Comey, which I think would be necessary, or release a subpoena of his memos. I think we can delay the inevitable, but I think this is going to happen sooner or later. And I also think, by the way, the political pressures that are incumbent upon these guys is going to get so severe that sooner or later you're going to start hearing people, and we've already heard murmurings of this, seeking either an independent counsel or some form of independent commission.
Your article about confusion at the White House, you write, Trump's mood is becoming so dark he's turning against most of his aides, even Jared Kushner. How is he turning on Kushner?
Well, our reporting bears out this sense that the president has that pretty much everybody in his circle has failed him. I think he is an angry man right now. I think it is very clear to everyone around him, particularly on his communications staff, that he is doing them no service and that many of their problems result from his behavior, not theirs, though he insists on targeting them because this is not a man who has a long track record of taking responsibility for his own mistakes. And I think Jared Kushner is somebody who has had really, you want to talk about a glide path to power. I mean, this is really almost a frictionless path to power. And, you know, he and his family were involved in that embarrassing story. I believe it was last week or the week before, where they were soliciting, his sister was soliciting Chinese investors and sort of dangling a $500,000 visa, investment visa in front of people. I think the president, my sources tell me, was extraordinarily upset with that. And I think he's really questioning sort of everybody around him. You know, it's funny, the two people he is closest with and trusts most are Keith Schiller, his longtime security guy, the one who is known for throwing Jorge Ramos out of that press conference a couple of years ago, and Hope Hicks, who is one of his spokespeople and communications folks.
Ryan in Clark, New Jersey. You're on WNYC with New York Times White House correspondent Glenn Thrush. Hi, Ryan.
Oh, thank you, Sonner. So my question is regarding possible motive for why they haven't jumped on the anti-Trump bandwagon. And I'm wondering if they think that it's easier to deal with, you know, the puppet king Trump than it is to deal with an actual politician Pence with an agenda that the Republican Congress might not want to work with. Is that a possibility? Am I off base?
Glenn, what do you think?
You can't replace presidents like spark plugs, right? It's not a matter of replacing somebody with someone else. If Trump goes down, and by the way, let me just say right now, we're very, very, very far away from that happening, both in terms of what we know informationally and the political situation. But if Trump falls, he takes the Republican Party down with him. You know, what people don't realize is over the last 10 years, on average, the sitting president has lost between 30 and 50 seats in the House of Representatives at his first midterms. Is Donald Trump going to lose less than that? Is he less of a polarizing figure than these other presidents? So while, you know, things look fairly rosy in the Senate, Republican Senate majority has a good situation. The House is really shaky. And remember, the health care vote passed by, what, 3 votes? So a small variation in that means that the House becomes essentially gridlocked. And I'm telling you now, in talking with House Republicans in leadership and outside of leadership, there is a sense that even had Trump done better than this, had these problems not been present, they only had 7 to 8 months of latitude anyway. If Trump goes down, the Republican brand in general goes down with him. So you can put Pence in, but you have a Gerry Ford situation. And you know what happened after Ford became president in terms of what the Democrats increasing their majorities in Congress.
We have Republican Senator Ben Sasse as our next guest, who was a very vocal Never Trump Republican last year, but I think has become more circumspect on his criticism since the election. We'll see if this is his moment. How important to Trump even remaining in office are independent-minded senators like Ben Sasse?
I think it's really important. And the other thing about, can I just say, you're going to talk with Sasse, you know, and we jump all over members of Congress and senators for being kind of these vanilla characters. You know, Sasse is an intellectually interesting guy. And I think sneakily, the Senate has become a much more interesting mixing bowl of people who are sort of outside the definition of standard parties. And I think Sasse is a really interesting guy. But look, you've got Lindsey Graham, who's been trying to play footsie with the White House on stuff because he likes sort of prodding them into a more militaristic stance, right? A more aggressive, muscular international stance. Mm-hmm. And Lindsey Graham and John McCain are a package. John McCain goes out yesterday and compares us to Watergate. And by the way, revenge is best served ice cold. And you recall what Donald Trump said about John McCain's incarceration in Hanoi during the campaign. So you have a guy like Lindsey Graham. You've got a guy like John McCain. You've got Sasse. You've got somebody like Pat Toomey, who I spoke to yesterday in Pennsylvania, who's regardless of Trump's victory there, it's still a very purple state. You have people like Governor Kasich in Ohio. I think you have a lot of people who are living in areas, in states where, you know, they can't afford, as House members can, to just be unitary. They have to be sort of binary. They have to sort of be less partisan. So the pressure, Susan Collins. So I think you have a cohort of between 6 and 10 senators. And by the way, once the wall breaks, it breaks. And if we see 1 or 2 people in the Senate start calling for an investigation, you might see Senator Burr jump on that, too.
New York Times White House correspondent Glenn Thrush. I can't wait to see what you and the others ask Sean Spicer today if he holds a press briefing, because the White House hasn't sent anybody out yet to respond to this Comey memo.
It's an off-camera, this is, as is often the case, it is an off-camera gaggle to the press pool that's flying with him to Connecticut today on Air Force One. So questions will be asked, but they won't be on camera. There'll be a fairly short duration, and it'll be just a limited number of reporters. This is pretty standard practice on a big news day.
Glenn Thrush, thanks a lot.
Take care.